the OTB Podcast Network.
David Myler, good morning.
Good morning, lads.
What was your first reaction when you saw yesterday that this thing might be a reality, that the European Super League might become a thing as soon as August?
I thought it was a disgrace, shambles. Like, obviously, they're talking about, you know, doing this, the founding 12 teams or whatever, and then they're basically untouchable. So whatever happens to them, this, you know, Super League happens, that if those 12 teams, you know, lose all their games, they can't be relegated. There's just no buzz to it. I really do hope that the Premier League kicked them out. You know, UEFA banned them and all that. I think it's a disgrace, to be honest.
Can I ask, how do you feel as a Liverpool fan?
Say it again, sorry?
How do you feel as a Liverpool fan?
You're disgusted. You know, Liverpool is a club that's, you know, built on its tradition, its history, the great success. It's kind of like, you know, the people's club in a way. You know, the amount of Liverpool fans that rally around the club, you know, the motto, you'll never walk alone, and all this. And it just seems that, you know, certainly with the Liverpool owner, of course, he's American, they're kind of going for this, like, you know, the NFL franchise, what they're trying to do. It's just pure greed. And it's unbelievable. I'm still trying to wrap my head around the whole thing. I'm flabbergasted by the whole lot. It's the same. It's not just Liverpool, though. It's Manchester United, you know. And then, like, Gary Neville makes, you know, wonderful points. He talks about it, like, Liverpool and Manchester United are the two biggest clubs in the UK. And, you know, the history that they have throughout, you know, their footballing times. It's just a shame that it's just come pure money and it's greed. It's remarkable.
In some ways, is it a little bit naive to think that Manchester United still had that connection to what football should be about in England? That did we underplay the importance of the Glazers and the owners at Liverpool and the owners at Arsenal and how much they actually just make the decision? It doesn't matter if at grassroots level you're tapping into every element of London, for example, if you're Arsenal. All that matters is who is the biggest majority shareholder and what he kind of wants to do when he flashes his cash.
No, definitely. It just seems that they don't care what the fans think, you know, what the people of the local areas, they just care about, you know, making money. Of course, there's been the numbers thrown around, you know, I believe each team will get 300-350 million. They're talking about, you know, the Premier League's only worth 150, Champions League's worth 110, that just trying to monopolize it where they can control it. Of course, look, they're unhappy with UEFA, stuff like that. It just shows that that's the way it is. They just see it straight and strictly as a business. They're trying to grow. Like, I heard you there speaking a minute ago to Tommy, talking about, you know, might have been Tommy brought up. They really are trying to tap into these foreign markets. They're just kind of forgetting about, you know, the loyal fans who go to the games week in, week out, and who travel home and away, travel across Europe, you know, for the Champions League or the Europa League. They're forgetting about those fellas. You know, they're trying to tap into these markets in the Asia and whatever to try and build this Super League where you get to watch all the best players playing all the time. But I feel it's going to fall on deaf ears eventually.
The thing that would worry me about that, David, is the fact that they've managed to exist for so long without fans. Granted, a lot of clubs are making losses at the moment, but they've proven over the last 9 months that they don't actually need fans. Football, they can exist in empty stadiums. If football loses complete touch with its own community, you can see people travelling from all over the world to go to Anfield, to go to Old Trafford, and to put their bums in seats regardless. It's just going to be a different background to the people who are actually showing up. And ultimately, that is all that matters to those people who run these clubs, that they get their matchday revenues. It doesn't matter where that money is coming from.
Yeah, but that's wrong. Like, because it should be about the history and the fans that, like, you know, I remember as a young boy going over to Anfield to watch games in the Premier League or the Champions League, my dad bringing me over. That was the buzz of it. You know, you can't lose sight of that. That's the history of the club. You know, you can't just abandon everything that's, you know, come before and then just focus on this, you know, Super League and, you know, just, like I said, I will go monopolize it and just think that it's just us and we can control it. You know, you see the board that they're talking about for the Super League with Perez from Real Madrid. You're looking at Henry Glazer and all those. It's just, it's ridiculous. It really is.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that is it really, isn't it? That identity that you would have had with the football club growing up, going over to Liverpool with your father, like that is something that you would assume will be affected massively by this, that there will be widespread protest from the football fans of those traditional clubs in England, that people will just stop showing up from the local areas or the people who've made that pilgrimage even from Ireland on a regular basis in the past, because this won't be forgotten too quickly.
No, it won't. And you think about it, like how they thought it would, you know, coexist with the Premier League, that the teams would be able to continue. You know, the Premier League aren't going to stand for that. You've seen statements come from the Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, that they're going to obviously expel the clubs. I hope they do it, because what is the Premier League without those teams? You know, the kind of that success that, you know, Leicester had a few years ago, which is then they get into the Champions League. But you know, all these stories are kind of gone. It's like everything is just being thrown out the window, just out of pure greed for money. It's no consideration for, you know, the Championship, League One, League Two, all the way down. And it's the same for, you know, the other countries like Spain and Italy. It's hard to kind of wrap my head around. I can't believe these conversations have been happening, that they're talking about, like, obviously exploring this idea, and now they're really, you know, going for it. You could see all the clubs have dropped out of the ECA. It's just crazy.
When you say the Premier League should expel the clubs, like, is that something that, like, is it a points deduction? Is it actually just removing them from the Premier League and just kind of leaving them off, cutting them loose, cutting the six clubs loose from the Premier League?
I'd get rid of them. You know, just get rid of them. If they want to, you know, obviously go ahead with this and make it happen, thinking that they can control it, then just get rid of them. You know, it's not right for, you know, English football, look, or if it's Italian teams or Spanish teams, it's not right for those leagues. Like, fair play to Germany. I know they're predominantly fan-owned or whatever. But they have investment with the fans. These are just, as you said a while ago, these are American owners who are just thinking about how can they line their pockets. They feel that this is the next step for their clubs to, you know, obviously progress and bring more money in. But I'd get rid of them. You know, just get rid of the clubs, because it's just a disgrace.
Gary Neville was talking yesterday about wrestling the control back from these rich club owners. So if we take your idea to its conclusion, you have a Premier League where these teams no longer exist. Is that an opportunity then for English football to reform its entire ownership structure, to move towards a more German model? I'm by no means a legal expert on this, and I'm sure the horse has bolted well beyond the top six here, David. But if that becomes a reality, like, is it time for England to reconsider how its football clubs are owned? Because you might be able to wrestle back some sort of touch that you might be able to get with the communities.
I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know I have all the answers, whatever. Of course, look, these owners that we mentioned have brought in, you know, they bring in a lot of investment. They bring in, you know, they go and sign the best players, which makes the Premier League one of the most exciting. Well, it is the most exciting league in the world. It's the most watched. There's no getting away from that. I think there needs to, like Gary Neville talks on, you know, an independent regulatory, you know, looking after everything. I do think he's got a point that we can try and somewhat control it. Liverpool, I'm a Liverpool fan. I benefited from it, from the players that they've been able to bring in. You look at Manchester United, of course, Chelsea, Man City would be the ones who've come in the last, 20 years of, not so much Man City, but from big investment that they've been able to bring in players to win titles, which made it more exciting. What is the Premier League without, you know, certainly Liverpool, United, Chelsea, Arsenal, Manchester City, okay, Spurs, not really sure how they've gotten into it. You know, they don't exactly have the big track record, but that just shows Daniel Levy already playing his hand in that. But what is the Premier League without those? You know, when I was promoted into the Premier League with Hull, those are the games you look forward to. Now to have a Premier League without those teams, if everything goes ahead and they are expelled. And what is the Premier League then? Of course, it's just, it will die off. Football will die off. It won't be the same. It will take many years for this to kind of go around. And then we don't know which way then, by then, how the Super League will actually be. It's certainly going to be interesting how it, you know, unfolds over the next few months.
Is there any way in this, in your mind, that there is even a tweak to this, that it works or that it's more palatable for what Gary Neville was saying yesterday, or to the people who run the other Premier League clubs, for example?
I don't know, really. I don't see how they can coexist. you know, Tottenham will obviously continue playing the Premier League on the weekend. If I'm right, obviously, we're still getting all the information with the Tottenham will play midweek. I love the Champions League. You know, it's kind of, you can see the Champions League has been come over years about money that, you know, I think it was Danny Mills was taunting not so long ago, and he says, why is it, you know, the top four English teams get in or whatever? It should be, it's the Champions League. It should be the champions. It does make a point, and they've tried to expand it. Now these clubs are looking to kind of, we are the biggest clubs of each league, so we want to form our own thing. But I think it kills the buzz. It's not what the fans want. It's just wrong. Everything about it just stinks of money and greed and trying, you know, have power and have control. And it's kind of, it's a prime example of foreign owners, whether it be, you know, American, Russian or whatever, just trying to have control and looking at, like, how can we, you know, bring in more money to this football club? How can I line my pockets with more money?
And the grim reality this morning, David, is you look at the statement and you look at the figures that have come out, they're going to be able to do that. They will be lining their money with more cash. They talk about the 12 founder clubs being given 3.5 billion euro between the 12 of them. So, like, that's an absolute gold rush for them. And as you say, if that's their motive, they've hit the jackpot right here. And that's the bottom line, isn't it? So it'll come down to whatever legal challenge is going to be brought to the table. But, I mean, when you look at the reporting this morning, it's as if the European Super League is actually going to be the one that instigates the legal challenges to stop it being blocked. So God knows who's going to have the most expensive law team in the world going toe-to-toe in this. But we'll have more on this later on in the show. We're going to have Tariq Panja of the New York Times as well. But we should talk a little bit about actual football, David, if you're up for that. The FA Cup. Saturday was an interesting one. I think on BBC at halftime of Chelsea against Manchester City, everyone was kind of admitting that this was a pretty poor game. But there is something fascinating about seeing this Manchester City team struggle tactically and seeing a manager like Thomas Tuchel figure out Pep Guardiola a little bit.
Yeah, well, definitely. I think the big thing that, you know, factored in with Manchester City was making so many changes. I know before anyone says it, that Pep has had this rotation, but it's kind of like, He's playing a juggling game. He's chopped and changed. Obviously, they had the success in the quarterfinal Champions League. They're 8 points ahead of United. I know United fans will be grabbing onto that bit of glimmer of hope, thinking that, you know, potentially we could go and we could win this. But certainly, I think he got it wrong, Pep. I think I would have liked to seen him play, you know, kind of your Maris, your Bernardo, Foden. I would have liked to seen them start the game. It's very difficult when you bring in lads who haven't. Like, you can see with Sterling, you know, it was one of his poorest performances I've seen him play. He just looked shot for confidence at the moment. Ferran Torres wasn't in the game. And I think that kind of played into Chelsea's hand. I definitely do think, yeah, you're right, Thomas Tuchel got his tactics right. And you could tell by the way that, you know, that Manchester City played dominant possession, pushing the fullbacks on, that, you know, it left Chelsea spaces and wide areas. You could see from Werner's runs that we were all shaped down the side, because they were trying to expose the centre-halves, pull them apart. I think even for someone who's been, you know, when he's been playing regularly, Laporte, he was just out of touch the other day. He looked all over the place, which is very, very unlike him. But definitely Chelsea fully deserved it. You know, Manchester City probably will be kicking themselves, but at the end of the day, I think they're purely settled on winning the Premier League and, of course, winning the Champions League. But at the same time as we were just talking, you know, we'll see. It'll be interesting to see if this Super League thing causes any problems with that, because they're taunting. I don't know if you saw it, but there was something saying hand PSG Champions League trophy, no?
Yeah, I mean, like PSG and UEFA, they're PSG are in UEFA's good books, to say the very least.
I know, of all teams that are owned by people, you know what I mean? Like... Dave said, no, we're not going to sign up for it. We're going to stay in France. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, maybe that's their best chance of ending their Champions League curse, is by actually just being the good boy in all of this and actually just shutting up and staying in UEFA for a little bit longer. It's interesting when you talk about Werner, for example, and just how he epitomizes this Chelsea pace on Saturday. Like, when it comes to the Tuchel system, they are going to come up against mass defences quite a bit when they go to challenge for the Premier League title next season, assuming the Premier League is normal next season. Is that something that might come up against them? But at the same time, when it comes into the Champions League quest this season, coming up against top quality teams, if they've got three games left, for example, coming up against high lines, this Chelsea attack is unbelievably dangerous.
Oh, no, they have exceptional players. And I do think, right, these players have become a little bit more settled to English football. You know, it's been, look, it was well documented how poorly they performed under Frank Lampard, and everybody, that's why he lost his job. But I think you could just see with Tuchel, there's someone who's been, you know, a manager a bit longer than Frank, who's more experienced. You know, if you saw Monday Night Football, where I think it was Carragher drew on it, who did, you know, Frank doesn't have that experience of, you know, of dealing with that. And you could see with Tuchel, someone who's been around a bit longer, that he's been able to just tweak and change, you know, a little few things. I definitely think Werner's playing a lot better. Of course, look, his statistics in front of goal aren't great. He's able to find more in him. And look, this Chelsea attack, like you said, Ziyech, it was interesting to listen to his interview. I think it was Jeff Shreeves asked him, are we seeing the, you know, the best of you? And he just kind of said, no, I'm getting there. And, you know, if you look at it, when he came over, he had COVID, he was injured, kind of like he hadn't, the Dutch league had stopped a long time. I do find he's starting to get up to speed with things now. They do have some quality players. You look at the rise again of Mason Mount, who just seems to be kicking on from time after time. They've just got quality all round. And I definitely do think that they do have a chance of winning this Champions League.
Well, one player just I wanted to touch on, David, is Jorginho, who seemed the playing embodiment of Sarri ball. And after Sarri left, people were like, well, what is Jorginho's role here? And under Lampard, it was kind of the same. Under Tuchel, he seems to have rediscovered himself.
I think with Jorginho, Jorginho is a type of player that if I don't want to, how can I say this? You need to understand what his role is. He's not a Kante. He's not, you know, a Modric in a sense. Jorginho is only there to control the tempo of the game. If you look at it, the positions he picks up and how he gets on the ball, like when you spoke there about Sarri ball, if you remember back to his time when he first came to Premier League, he was averaging 120, 130 passes a game. A lot of people then moan, kind of going, well, he's only playing sideways and backwards. But a lot of the time, a fella like him needs to get on the ball in order to shift defences around the place. Now, if the game, if you're winning or if you're drawing, that's fine. If you're losing, then it can be seen as a negative approach because he's just trying to control it where it's only 5 yard passes, the centre half, get it, turn, go out. He's trying to basically shift, you know, opposition players out of their formation, the structure that they're in. I'm a big fan of his. And I think Tuchel has seen that. If you look at, like, in his PSG team, he, you know, Verratti was a similar type, albeit Verratti is better at what he does. But he's certainly the one that he wants in the team just to kind of control the tempo. That's someone who can put a foot in the ball when everything's a bit frantic. Seen that the other day against Manchester City, he's one of the players who wants to get on it, knock it about, you know, just take the ball, kind of calm everyone down. And when you have a player who'll take the ball anywhere and who's comfortable on it, it kind of controls that, you know, franticness of everyone running around, but it also just adds a bit of calm to the other players. And I do think he's a massive part of Tuchel's plans going forward.
Is that having a big impact on Kante and his better performances then as well?
Yeah, probably. I think, look, there's been a thing about Kante, you know, certainly even going back to Sarri, he's not played in his natural position of that holding midfielder. You know, they've kind of, that's unique. Kante is the best at what he does, at going and winning the ball back, keeping it simple. You know, we've seen him with France, how good he is, certainly before under Conte at Chelsea. I think, now he's kind of, like Tuchel said, he was excited to, you know, work with him and manage him. Seems like he's just looked at what is Kante good at and can we get him doing that, and you've seen that now that he's just getting him to do what he is very good at, and that's how you'll get the best out of Kante.
You touched on it there, David, but it does seem that there is now a very noticeable drop off between Pep's first choice 11 and his not first choice 11. When Pep plays roulette now at this point, you can know how it lands, how the game is eventually going to go. There's a couple of players who perhaps, the fact that they haven't been played in big games, maybe that lessens their confidence a little bit, and then the performances have dipped. But the depth that we would have pointed towards when it came to Manchester City a couple of months ago maybe isn't as strong as we thought.
I think it still is as strong. Just think it shows that they're not playing, some of the players aren't playing regular football. You know, like they're not up to speed. Like you look at, you know, the teams he played against Dortmund, you knew they were his main, his starting 11. Like, you look at it, okay, the midfield, you can chop and change. You know, with Bernardo Silva, you know what you're getting. Rodri, Fernandinho, Gundogan, you know what you're getting with those players. I think the big one is the front three. I think, you know, like I touched on there, Raheem Sterling, like, I don't know, look, his confidence must be low. You know, I know his statistics aren't great this season, but the other day, you know, his first touch at times, he was overhitting passes. If you remember, he was laid on, I think it was about 75, 80 minutes. Someone, it was Cancelo or something, went to overlap him and he passed the ball straight out of the play, which is so unlike him. I think the massive drop-off is the front three players. I think that's the big thing. You know, he went with Torres, Jesus and Sterling, but the three of them just looked like they were lost. They really struggled against Chelsea's back three. And I think the rotation can affect players. Of course, if you're confident, you want to, you know, if you're doing well, you want to stay in the team. But I still think they have great squad depth, you know, and certainly midfield and defence. Of course, look, I touched on Laporte wasn't great the other day, but that's one game for him. You know, he's been injured, yes, but over time he's been very good for Manchester City, so it's very hard to criticise him. Even if you look at the keeper, you know, Stefan, he gets caught in no man's land for Ziyech's goal, kind of comes sprinting out and he goes back, and I think he thinks he's in the middle of goal, but he's about 5 yards to, you know, towards the right hand post. He just makes it so easy for Werner to roll across the ZH. But they still have squad depth. There's no doubt in that. You can imagine the front three would be replaced for the League Cup final this weekend. You know, Ederson will come back in, but you wouldn't be surprised if you've seen the other seven starting.
Yeah, for sure. Let's move on to tonight's game in the Premier League, Leeds United against Liverpool. It's an 8 o'clock kickoff. And since we were last talking to you on this show anyway, we were speaking to Graeme Souness about the Liverpool midfield situation and how he's a little bit concerned about how the Gini Wijnaldum talk has affected the rest of that midfield. From the start of next season, David, how would you like to see this Liverpool midfield set up?
Well, my three.
Yeah.
I'd probably still like to see, you know, Fabinho, Wijnaldum, Henderson. Certainly with Klopp's system and the way Klopp wants to play, I think those three have been pivotal. That's why they won the Premier League and the Champions League. I definitely do think those are the main three. Thiago's an exceptional footballer, but he just brings something a little bit different. I think he's adjusting to Jurgen's system and the way Jurgen wants to play with this, you know, that his famous gegenpress or whatever, when they get after him, when the front three press high. Will be interesting to see what happens with Gini. You know, obviously this whole Barcelona talk is still arising. Of course, you know, Ronald Koeman being in charge is someone that he knows very well. So the situation, I believe it's not down to money. I think it's down to years of the contract. I think Gini wants more than what Liverpool give him due to their rule of over 30s. But it will be interesting to see how they do it. You know, I would like to see him to stay. I think Liverpool fans, if he does leave, would be gutted to see him go, but they will, you know, the work he's done over the last few years. But then if he does go, the natural progression would be probably Thiago in straight away. And then you'd look at, you know, Curtis Jones to be pushing him over the next, you know, year or two to really nail down a starting 11 spot.
So you think that there is a chance that Wijnaldum actually does stay next season?
Sorry,
You think there is a chance, even a slight one, that Wijnaldum actually might hang around at Anfield next season?
Yeah, I do. Sorry there, I just missed part of that in case you asked me anything else. But I do think there is a chance, yeah. Like if you look at the games that have been played, like Gini has played so many games over the last few years, and I know you're going to be desperate to keep him. It's just, Jurgen can obviously, you know, say to the board, I want to give him the 3-year contract or whatever, the club might be looking at it. In the sense, like, is he worth it for the next 3 years? Then we've no sell-on value. You know, that kind of way. So they'll be weighing up a lot of things. Of course, they'll be looking at, like, the rise of Curtis Jones coming through, someone who's come through the academy that then don't need to go and sign another midfielder. I would definitely say I wouldn't close the door on it. I would like to see him stay. But it's down to the club and the player if they can come to an agreement.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens on that one. It is an 8 o'clock kickoff tonight, as I say, between Leeds and Liverpool. Just one other thing I wanted to get your take on, David. I saw you tweeting about Lionel Messi at the weekend. Like, unbelievable goal. 4-0 win in the Copa del Rey final. What can you even say about this? I think, first of all, Frankie de Jong deserves a lot of credit for his role in this, the way that that pass to cap off. An unbelievable move.
Oh, it's just phenomenal. I get stick over. I'm Messi over Ronaldo. A couple of my mates are Manchester United fans, so they're loyal. I get it. But what that fella does with the ball is just incredible. And even I tweeted it out the other day and people hit me with the, all professional footballers should be able to do that. And I'm just like, no, I've played with Premier League winners, Champions League winners. I just can't do that. You know, his ability to pick the ball up, dribble, you know, shrug off tackles, his way to pass the people, his movement, like the composure of that when he gets the ball back off Frankie de Jong. Yeah, look, you can highlight his poor defending, but it's the drop of the shoulder. Like, it was a famous thing, if you remember Manchester United, those times when they were battling out against Barcelona, the Champions League, around 2010 or whatever, they were saying, what do you do with Messi? Do you show him on your right foot? But he's that quick, he's that good. He'll cut onto his right and go back around you onto his left. It's very, very difficult to stop him. And he's just phenomenal. He's someone that gets you off your seat. You know, of course, people will say, oh, well, he only won all the things because, you know, he had the great players of Xavi, Iniesta, and those around him. Yeah, you're not wrong. But if you look at every great team that they've had great midfield, they've had great defence. Like, I saw something fascinating not so long ago with Arsene Wenger was talking about, you know, how hard was it to manage all the big egos at Arsenal? And he said, all the best players in the world want to play with the best players. And that's true, because you don't want to, if you're looking at, like, even after the, you know, the final, they won the trophy, all the players were asking for Messi for photos with him with the trophy. It just shows that, you know, they're in awe of him, like I would be, but they're not at the level where they can carry the water alongside him. Do you know what I mean? They're obviously these young up and coming talents. They're wonderful young players.
Yeah.
We hope that we see them get to the level that we want them to. But Xavi, Iniesta and them never, Messi didn't have to worry about them, nor did they have to worry about Messi. They were always going to take care of their business. Now it's a case of mantle is falling onto Messi. And even with Ronaldo, to a certain degree, you look at him at Juventus, they brought him in to win the Champions League. Like, he's trying to do everything, but you still need your team to, you know, come along with you and do more. And I definitely like Messi, pure enjoyment watching him.
Yeah, without question. David Myler, great stuff as ever. Thanks a million.
Cheers, lads.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.